It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The homeless are among the most vulnerable populations in our region. What extra efforts are being made to keep them safe during the coronavirus outbreak? Jay Poliziani is the executive director of Northside Common Ministries, which operates a shelter as well as a food pantry. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Kevin.
Jay, earlier this month, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued some suggestions to homeless shelters across the country. What are you doing differently now that maybe you weren't doing, say, 1 month, 2 months ago?
Sure. Many of our services have been adapted. We are committed to being here for the folks who are most in need in our community, still operating our food pantry, still operating our shelter, still being here for showers for the people who are street homeless. But we do recognize that we need to change the way that we operate in many ways. The men who are here in our nighttime shelter generally have 25 to 28 men every night. They stay with us for several months at a time while they get back on their feet. Typically, they leave during the day so that we can then open the doors for the street homeless. We have changed that so that they actually are able and encouraged to stay in as much as possible. They do, of course, get a little stir crazy and need to go for some walks, but they are in the building throughout the day. Our daytime drop-in center has experienced a huge change. That is the folks who are street homeless living in tents or abandoned houses. They would have typically come here during the day to get a shower, do their laundry, get a hot meal, congregate, hang out. Sometimes we could see as many as 60 people a day. Some of those were also low-income folks who just were looking for companionship. We've changed that significantly in that the individuals are allowed in for showers and laundry still, but we ask them to leave immediately, and we are screening them at the door for any signs of a virus, and come back for lunch to get their bagged lunch to take with them.
Let me ask you, how do you screen them?
Well, at this point, it's asking the basic questions that the CDC is providing, you know, about temperature, cough, also observation. We haven't had anyone yet that we've had to turn away, but it's basically going by observation and their word.
You have your clients who stay overnight, and you mentioned the street homeless. Nursing homes and jails are restricting visitors. Are visitors permitted at your shelters?
Well, we've never really had a lot of visitors at the shelter. We do have some volunteers that come in and they help with different things. So we are still open for that. However, a lot of the volunteers that have been very active for many years tend to be older folks coming from different church groups. So they're still dropping off hot meals that they prepared, but they're not coming in and serving because of their risk as well. We do have some gentlemen here who are in the high risk categories, and we are asking them to stay in all the time. One man's on 24-hour oxygen, a couple with respiratory illnesses. And the county is working very diligently, very hard to get those individuals into more appropriate settings, because this communal living setting is clearly not a good model for those individuals.
Are your residents still going to their jobs if they work at places deemed essential businesses?
Yes, but there's only a couple at this point, because a lot of them were doing food service, and they were kind of the first person to go, kind of low man on the totem pole. So there's not a lot of them. We have about three that are going to places that are still in operation. Yes.
When they're inside the shelter, you have communal living and dining. What's your advice because they are in close quarters?
Yeah, certainly. This setting has worked for us for many years, almost four decades, but this is not ideal at this particular time. Men are all in one dorm, and they do have meals together. Now, as far as the meals, we've scattered it so that everybody's not sitting down at the same time, but we're, serving in shifts, essentially. And then for the shelter dorm, anyone that has any kind of cough or shortness of breath or anything at all, we're moving them into the sitting room to sleep on cots as opposed to being in the dorm. At this point, it's working. But, it's certainly not ideal.
Jay Poliziani from Northside Common Ministries is our guest. Have you seen a greater need for shelters since the outbreak began?
Well, we actually have seen more people come to the door. As soon as one man leaves for housing, we've always, had a policy of filling the bed right away. We are being more thorough about cleaning the area and disinfecting it before we let someone else in, and then screening individuals. But we do seem to be seeing a couple more a day than we usually had. So unfortunately, we have to turn a few folks away. Hopefully, they're getting into some of the other shelters. But I do expect that as prisons are releasing more people and the halfway houses are releasing more people, we'll probably see an increase in numbers of people requesting shelter.
A group from my parish, including myself, volunteer and provide breakfast each Saturday morning at East End Cooperative Ministries. They've made changes to how they serve their daily community lunches. No more dining in, all grab and go. And before, folks could come in and sort of shop, if you would, for any non-perishables they need. Now everything is prepackaged, no hand-to-hand contact. Have you adjusted how you operate your food pantry?
Yes, we have. On there, Jana, who coordinates our food pantry, has done a great job. She was right on this at the very beginning, and she has made some significant changes. She's committed to trying to allow people to shop and select their items for as long as possible before we have to give that model up. And she's been doing some things with phone-in orders and people ordering on Facebook so that they don't have to come into the building. And making sure that only 5 people come into the building at a time. When we might have had 40 people in the room, now we're down to 5. And before they come into any space, they are washing their hands. People have been really very understanding of it. It's pretty big, dramatic changes for us, but they really appreciate that we're trying to be here for them, for as long as possible, offering some choice. We realize that at some point we're probably going to have to go to the prepackaged boxes and just handing those out. But right now, this is working, and people are pretty understanding of it.
And special precautions, maybe for staff and volunteers, so that they can continue to serve your clients?
Yes, we are certainly looking for face masks for staff and volunteers as well. But I'm having a harder time with that. But basically, the same precautions that everybody's being advised of, with the hand washing and sneezing and social distancing. Social distancing is a little difficult here, but we are getting more forceful about it with the clients that we serve. If staff are not feeling well, they would let us know immediately. We've been really, again, blessed that staff are coming through. They're keeping us open, and they're committed to their work, and everybody is healthy at this point.
Jay Poliziani is the Executive Director of Northside Common Ministries. Jay, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for talking with us. Stay safe.
I'm Kevin Gavin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Governor Tom Wolf ordered residents to stay at home yesterday in several of the state's largest counties, including Allegheny, Bucks, Chester, Delaware, Monroe, Montgomery, and Philadelphia. Here to talk about what that means for listeners like you is WESA's Sarah Bowden. Sarah, welcome.
Hey, Megan.
Sarah, what tangible difference does this make for us here in Pittsburgh?
I don't think there's much of a difference if you've been following along and doing what the governor and the secretary of health and the county health department have been telling us to do. It's my understanding, however, that gatherings of up to 10 people were allowed. Now that's not allowed under this new order. But if you've been doing everything that you should be doing when it comes to social distancing, this doesn't practically make a difference.
Some of those efforts all to help limit the potential spread of coronavirus. One question that's been floating around for about a week or so is whether regular health care will continue, including elective procedures. Allegheny Health Network says they will not be doing them anymore. UPMC says they will. Sarah, before we get to the nuance of all that, what does that term mean, elective?
Elective simply means scheduled ahead. When people think about elective surgery, usually they think, oh, plastic surgery, but these procedures are medically necessary. It just means that they're not emergencies, they're not imminent. So hernia repair, knee surgery, biopsies, these are all elective surgeries.
And we should note right now, patients do weigh in on these decisions in conjunction with both specialists and their primary care physicians. They all make this decision together.
Yeah, definitely. Though it's really difficult to figure out for a lot of these doctors I'm hearing whether or not to go forward with the surgery because without proper medical intervention, sometimes what's a problem that needs to be taken care of but is not an emergency can become an emergency. But I'm also hearing from folks that a lot of surgeries, elective surgeries that are not imminent, should wait, are going forward. It's really subjective and it can be a really difficult choice for medical providers to make.
Yeah, not everything can be postponed, but how do you make that decision? I want to turn for a second to UPMC's Dr. Donald Ely.
We have adequate protective equipment for all types of care. We screen for people who may have the COVID infection, and we carefully created guidelines to help guide individual physicians and their patients about how to change care plans. We've had lots of cases already that have been deferred or canceled. And so, in fact, the perception that nothing has changed at all is inaccurate. Patients and physicians together have already made a great many changes.
So if we take that at face value, that UPMC has plenty of equipment and they're following national guidelines, what are the risks to keeping elective surgery an option for UPMC?
Well, right now our hospitals are actively caring for patients with COVID-19, and we know that a good portion of our population has COVID-19 and just haven't developed symptoms yet, or maybe the symptoms are mild and they don't realize that they're sick. So the more often you have people congregating in any place, the more likely this very sticky virus is to spread. Also, when you perform surgery on someone, you have to get really close to them, which doesn't help with social distancing. And that exposes healthcare workers who we need to be healthy right now in preparation for a surge.
On the flip side, any upsides?
I'm also hearing from other UPMC folks that are saying, you know, we're being really diligent with making these decisions, and there's a value in doing these elective surgeries now because we don't know how long our hospital system will be backed up. It may be a really, really long time. I mean, are you just supposed to live in pain? It's, again, a very difficult choice. My sense from employees of UPMC that are unhappy with the healthcare system is that they feel like UPMC should be more decisive and have moved quicker when it comes to making these decisions.
And Sarah, before you go, the volume, of course, of COVID-19 cases continues to grow. State Health Department Director Dr. Rachel Levine said in a briefing yesterday that from now on, she expects the count to at least double every day. That doesn't sound like we're flattening the curve yet. Is there any good news to be had in that announcement yesterday from Dr. Levine and Governor Tom Wolf?
I didn't hear any good news. I hear that people are still getting sick. What I can say, though, is that it's way too soon to know if our social distancing efforts are working. We'll know in a week, couple weeks. So if you're like, I spent all weekend indoors and I didn't see my friends and I didn't see my family and this really sucks and I'm really bored and I'm really scared and I keep seeing these cases go up and it's not making a difference what I'm doing, know that it probably is making a big difference. We're just not going to see the payoff yet. It's kind of like when you start a diet or an exercise program, you know, like the first couple months, you're not going to see a difference, but you have to put that work in now to see that difference in a couple months. As someone who really likes instant gratification and has never been really good at dieting, I can appreciate how frustrating it is. It's personally really disheartening to see cases go up and up and up, and it's scary. But that doesn't mean that what we're doing right now isn't working. We're just not seeing the results yet.
Sarah Bowden covers health and science for WESA. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thanks, Megan.
I'm Megan Harris.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. On March 16th, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf first ordered restaurants to only provide takeout service and all non-essential businesses throughout the state to close to mitigate the spread of coronavirus. It caused a wave of concern in the food industry. Which businesses were considered non-essential? The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports that the state has been scrambling since then to make sure that food producers, processors, and distributors keep working during the crisis.
That initial announcement by Governor Tom Wolf was vague about which Pennsylvania businesses were considered non-essential and expected to close for 2 weeks.
So there was this flurry of activity initially, at least on first glance, concerned that this food system would potentially be at risk of operating.
This is the state Secretary of Agriculture, Russell Redding. His office got a ton of phone calls.
Farms are worried about milk pickup, to livestock options, whether they could operate, whether the food processing and manufacturing sector was required to shut down, if they were producing products that may be considered non-essential, like candies.
At the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture, Executive Director Hannah Smith Brubaker also got many panicked calls and emails, mostly focused on whether the state considered farms, livestock processing, and farm markets essential businesses.
And in fact, you know, many farmers markets across the state have shut down.
In Pittsburgh, the Bloomfield Winter Market is one that's closed temporarily, at least until March 28th. Within days, Governor Wolf clarified his remarks. Agriculture and related businesses are considered essential and are not being asked to close. That was a relief to Lindsay Shapiro and her husband, owners of Rootmass Farm. They employ four people and sell vegetables at markets in Philadelphia. Even with the state's support to stay open, they're expecting a big drop in foot traffic and sales, which means many hours at the kitchen table discussing how to safely get food to their customers.
Still kind of unclear how we're going to get that food into people's hands without regular farmers markets, for us at least, because that is about 85% of our business.
The state agriculture department has issued guidance on this. While allowing farmers markets to continue, it's asking for safety precautions that could include new pickup options or direct deliveries to customers. Not everyone in food production is worried.
Well, it's actually not affected the farmer a whole lot. Me in particular, not at all.
This is Jason Naylor, who runs a 75-cow dairy near Harrisburg.
The only impact I have seen is with the kids being out of school, I have a lot more help than I normally do through the week.
Naylor actually kind of likes it when he sees milk shelves empty at the supermarket. It says people are buying his product. Despite worries about coronavirus and maybe some consumer hoarding, he doesn't see any reason to worry about the milk supply. The cows will still need to be milked.
Farmers, we're working 365 days a year. No matter what the weather, no matter what happens in the world, we always have to work. These cows need milk 24/7. And every farmer is in that way. It doesn't matter if you produce beef or you produce pork, you still have to feed and take care of your animals daily. That is not going to stop.
Still, there have been some hiccups because of the increased consumer demand for milk. Agriculture Secretary Redding says just this week, the state diverted a milk truck headed to a cheese processing plant in central PA and sent it to a milk plant in Philadelphia instead.
It had to go to the location where they were actually able to process fluid milk in half gallons and gallon containers.
Redding says it's been a scramble making decisions like this in real time, but it's forcing the state and its food producers to find new ways of securing food for people. In Pittsburgh, I'm Julie Grant.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. A reminder to keep up to date on how the spread of the new coronavirus is affecting our region. Go to our coronavirus blog that is updated throughout the day at WESA.FM. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Kylie Kaczynski, and Megan Harris. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.